Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because I'm talking Drive with the fastest guy I know, Mark Ahn.
Hi guys, I'm a real human being, and my first name is spelled Mark, B-A-B-Y.
Nice, I like it. You have sad eyes, soulful eyes.
You know, and I don't say very much at all.
The saddest really of speak. Eyes. Yes, obviously with Edgar Wright's Baby Driver currently in theaters and making the internet's head explode, we thought, what better time to revisit Drive from 2011, a movie that came out while F This Movie was in existence, and for some reason we never did a podcast on it, never wrote a review of it.
We were you had a wedding to go to.
Yeah, it only ever got covered, I think, on our like 10 best lists. So now we're going to devote a full episode to the movie Drive, but of course first we have to take care of some other things. Like, I need to thank our most recent donors to F This Movie. Thank you to Tim Smedlin for your recurring monthly donation to F This Movie, and thank you to Dustin Palms for your donation to F This Movie. If you're ever interested in throwing away some money that you don't want and you want to kick it our way to help keep the lights on here at F This Movie, you can go to fthismovie.net. There's a PayPal link there. And anything is appreciated to help pay for web hosting and Mark Ahn's ransom, you know, those kinds of things.
Have you guys met Charlie Bromley? He's the little voice at the end of the podcast.
Yes.
Do you want Charlie Bromley to go to college?
His voice doesn't sound like that anymore. And it makes me sad sometimes when I put that on the end of the episodes, because that's not how he talks anymore.
It's the relentless passage of time.
Thanks for listening to This Movie. He's like a real moody teenager.
Right. He's like, Dad, where could I get the car keys?
Yeah, right? Yeah. He's only 8, by the way. But
yeah, don't drive the car, Charlie. You
so
can.
Advanced, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yes.
He's got hair.
He's got the gloves, though.
A lot of hair.
He's not a baby, but like, because he's only 8, I would call him like a baby driver.
The only thing baby about him is the amount of popcorn that he can eat. if you had a baby-sized amount of popcorn... Like 10 pounds of popcorn.
It's bananas.
He just put it down.
Yeah.
Like, no problem.
It's crazy.
He just goes about his day. It's like Linus with his blanket under his arm, and he just walks around with a bag of popcorn.
I get concerned at a certain point. I have to physically take it away from him, because I don't think he's aware of how much popcorn he's actually ingesting. It's nightmarish. Anyway, before we talk about Drive, Mark Ahn, have you seen anything good lately?
I have, thankfully, seen some things that are good lately.
I can't wait to hear about them.
And I'm especially thankful because I was on a run. Adam Riske and I were on a run of movies where everything we watched was really boring. I don't know. It just was that
but
particular situation.
But you guys were picking bad. I mean,
look, we know.
When you decide to go see Ghost in the Shell, what do you think is going
to
happen?
I mostly blame Adam because Adam sees everything.
Yes.
Which is fine. And then he and I our schedules usually don't match up. So he usually goes to see things like right away, like Thursday. And I'm like, dude, I can't see it on a Thursday. But I'll go see with you on a Friday, but I can't because he's already seen it by then. So we were on a run of really terrible movies. I'm glad to see something really nice. The other thing, too, also, is that my girlfriend has been taking a film class.
Yes.
Which is wonderful, and it's forced her to see a bunch of really awesome movies, and it's also forced me to see a bunch of really awesome movies, because it's her homework. There's no textbooks, it's just movies, which I'm sure for a lot of our listeners, that's sort of like a dream come true.
Yeah.
So I got to see some really good stuff, like, for the very first time. I saw The Searchers, which we don't need to talk about, because The Searchers was awesome, and I felt really dumb that I hadn't seen it until now. There's so much to say about
it. It's pretty good.
Go see it. It's amazing. It's totally worth... Like, if it's on your list and you haven't seen it, just go see it. It's totally worth it. It's beautiful. I just don't think people, they have these big landscape shots of Monument Valley, and it just makes me think that that doesn't get done as much anymore, right? Because everyone's like, well, I'll just,
Because it was missing, like, Decepticons, you know?
Right.
It was like,
right.
I see your valley, but I want to crowd it with CGI robots.
A laser shooting up into the sky.
Yes. Please.
Okay. That'll make Monument Valley complete because it's not beautiful enough. But I think to that point, I think part of it is just that we don't, you know, it's so much easier to just, like, instead of going on location to somewhere weird and beautiful, you're just like, hey, yeah, well, I have a laptop, and so I'll just... Anyway, so it's beautiful. Go watch Searchers. It's great. I saw one thing I hadn't seen before, which I hadn't even heard of, was Clute.
You've never heard of Clute?
I've never heard of Clute.
You're a monster, sir.
I know.
That's a terrific movie.
I'm just a baby. and so, but because of Clute, I finally understand the Jane Fonda hype.
Had you never seen Barbarella?
I had seen Barbarella, which is
then
great.
Then you should have understood it.
Oh, no, I understand the hype, but I feel like that's a very different kind of hype
it
than
is.
Like the hype that comes from Clute. Clute is a great, she gives this like great, awesome kind of actory performance, and it's great. She plays this super tough, mouthy prostitute who gets into trouble. I hadn't heard about it. I hadn't seen it, and we watched it, and it's...
She won the Oscar for that. Yeah,
it's really, that's really, really... Yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah, that movie's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. What else? One thing that we've both seen, actually, I don't think I got your opinion about this, was the other day I watched Jet Li's The Enforcer, which is the English language title of it, but the Chinese title is My Father is a Hero. It came out in 95. And my favorite lasting memory of this movie is that it's just about him and his son. He's like this undercover cop kind of guy. And then his son also is a martial arts expert because it's like
right.
That's his son.
Right.
And then, you know, so the hijinks ensue. And the culminating fight in the movie is both Jet Li and his son taking on the bad guys, which is, that's fine because the son is already established as a great martial artist. But then there's a part where the son, who's like Charlie Bromley size, he's like 8 or 9 in the movie, is like at the end of a rope, and then Jet Li is throwing his kid at bad guys.
Right.
And the kid like throws a bunch of punches, and then Jet Li snaps him back like a yo-yo and then throws him at another bad guy. And it's everything I love about the 90s. And it's so great. It's not the first time me watching it. I just kind of watched it a couple of days ago. Have you seen it?
I think I borrowed it from you.
Yeah,
maybe?
I think I don't know, but I don't think we ever talked about it, so I don't know what you thought about it.
And when you started talking about it, I was thinking of The Defender, and I was like, well, I've never seen The Enforcer. And then as soon as you said his son, I was like, oh yeah, no, I've definitely seen
that.
Yeah,
there's only one movie.
Movie.
There's only one movie where a kid gets thrown around.
Yes. Again, like a handful of martial arts movies, it's worth it for that big last fight scene. Like, I don't love everything leading up to it.
Yeah.
But that last scene is, it makes the whole thing worth it.
We totally agree. And then I saw a bunch of other stuff, but the only thing worth mentioning is Baby Driver, which Patrick mentioned up at the top. I kind of overloaded on the movie. I've seen it twice.
Oh, wow.
Already, yeah.
It's only been out for a few days.
I know. I saw it Wednesday, and I saw it on Friday.
Okay.
It just happened. Like, two different groups of friends were like, hey, let's go see Baby Driver. And I'm like, I don't have a problem with that. That's fine. So I've been overloading on it a little bit, and I just keep on, like, I found the songs, and I've been listening to the songs the entire time. I mean, I want to hear what you think about it as well, but one thing I thought about was, if I was the younger version of myself, and I don't want this to sound like an insult. It might sound insulting, but it's not. Like, if 25-year-old me, and taking into account, like, only the movies that 25-year-old me had watched up until that point, and then this came out, 25-year-old me would have been like, this is my favorite movie ever. And that doesn't, and I don't want to make it sound like, oh, it's not a good movie, because it really is, but I think it taps into something about 25-year-old me that would have loved every single second of this. So I don't know.
I liked it. I liked it, you know, I like every Edgar Wright movie. I think sometimes I put unreasonably high expectations on every new Edgar Wright movie.
Sure.
There's a handful of directors, Paul Thomas Anderson, Quentin Tarantino,
yeah,
where I expect every new movie to be a masterpiece.
Right.
And I'm still living with Baby Driver. I only saw it, I think, 2 days ago. And so I don't want to rush to judgment, because I know there's a lot about the movie that I would appreciate even more just in terms of its construction upon repeat viewings, yeah, because it's so incredibly meticulously edited.
Yeah.
And timed. I was watching it, and it certainly just made me happy. It's super entertaining. All the performances are, well, not all the performances, a lot of the performances are really fun. Music obviously is great, and Edgar Wright is just one of these filmmakers who just really celebrates making movies and whose every new movie is informed by every movie he's ever seen and loved.
Yeah.
And so that's super awesome. I know at the end there was a cameo. There's a cameo in the last few minutes. It's the voice only. You don't see the person, and I won't reveal it. But I saw who it was in the credits, and I turned to my wife, and I said, oh, that was so-and-so. And she, between that and a cameo that's earlier in the movie, there's really only two cameos, she turned to me and said, you and Edgar Wright would be friends, right?
Best friends.
I said, yeah.
Sorry, Doug.
So I liked it. There are certain things that I feel like I still have reservations about. Maybe those are things that would go away if I were to see the movie a few more times. Again, maybe it's one of those things where my expectations were too high.
Yeah.
And so seeing certain things upon repeat viewing, I might overlook those things. I mean, there's so much that's great about it. I'm not trying to knock the movie at all.
Yeah. I would say on the second viewing, I had just as much fun,
yeah,
if not more. Because, you know, you just pick up, you know, certain things are going to happen, so you pay attention to other
right.
things. And
right.
there, and because it's an Edgar Wright movie, there's so many, like, little bits of business that
right.
you can pay attention to that are lots of fun. So
that scene yeah. in Shaun of the Dead when they're beating the shit out of the zombie to, I think it's a Queen song, right? When they're and it's timed out,
yeah.
so the hits are on the. It's like he took that and was like, "What if I did that
the entire
for feature time. Length?" Right, exactly. And so that's Baby Driver.
It's there's, I don't. Hopefully, this doesn't give away anything. The minorest of minor spoilers is. I think everybody knows that there's music such a large part of the movie, so I don't think that's a major spoiler. At all.
I don't think so.
But it's. It's so much of the movie. It's like every second of it.
Yeah.
Like I don't necessarily remember a time where it's just totally silent, where it's just two people talking. There's always something underneath it or something. So, I was surprised by how much of it was like timed out and
right.
musical and whatever.
Right.
So anyway, everybody go see it. It's great. It's worth watching. Don't expect the greatest movie of all time, but you shouldn't really ever
think it's the greatest movie of all, you know, a lot of people I feel like think it's the greatest movie of all time, which yeah. is fine. That, you know, I'm on board for that. It is at least something original in a summer that is woefully short on things that are original. Even the other movie that just came out this weekend, well, there were two, The Big Sick, which I haven't seen yet, which is original, but the Sofia Coppola movie, The Beguiled, which I'm really excited to see, is also a remake.
Hey,
so,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a Don Siegel, Clint Eastwood movie, which is awesome, by the way.
Okay.
The Clint Eastwood movie is really good. So I'm super excited to see The Beguiled, but it is also a remake.
Yeah.
So it's just, there are so few original movies that it's...
It's great to get one.
Even though I know right now somebody's like, Baby Driver's not original, it's just this amalgamation of all these other movies. Like, yeah, maybe, but... It's filtered through an original lens, you know. So, yeah, I think it's absolutely worth seeing.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
I'm going to try not to talk about it too much in relation to Drive, even though...
That's kind of why we...
and it's hard not to. As
right.
I was watching Drive last night, I kept comparing certain things.
Yeah, no, I did the same thing.
Which is not necessarily fair. I will talk about a few things briefly. One was Baby Driver, obviously. Another movie that I saw, again, I'm coming off of Junesploitation, so much of what I watched was just crazy Junesploitation stuff, but I did manage to see a musical from, I think, 1941 or 1942 called You'll Never Get Rich, which just came out on Blu-ray from Twilight Time. And it's only been within the last 6 months that I started kind of exploring the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers musicals. This is not a Ginger Rogers musical. This is Fred Astaire and Rita Hayworth. And this is Rita Hayworth in her, like, feature debut. This is
oh.
her first role as a lead actor. And the movie's, like, okay. You know, it's,
sure.
it's the same as a lot of other musicals. The dialogue isn't as good as in some other movies. The songs are decent. They're Cole Porter songs. There's a couple incredible dance numbers. Fred Astaire has this one long tap solo inside an army barracks that's, like, unbelievable. I bring it up. I don't know how to talk about this without seeming so gross. But, like...
I'm so excited.
I don't know.
True confessions, guys.
I don't know how to talk about Rita Hayworth. Like...
Sure.
I don't even know how to put it into words watching her on screen. And it isn't just physical beauty, even though she's very physically beautiful. There's just something about her that I don't know if I've ever seen in another actor on screen. Hmm. The way that she just is like from another planet. I don't even know how to talk about it. And so it was funny because Erica kept walking through the room as it was on. She'd catch a couple minutes. And every time she walked by, she'd go, "She's so pretty. It's not fair. We already talked about this, right?" And I was like, "Yeah, we did already talk about this
10 times."
But honestly, I mean, I remember, and this is something I've lived with my entire life, because I remember years ago seeing just the clip of Gilda where her head pops up into frame, and just thinking, "Oh my God, who is that?" And finding out it was Rita Hayworth, and kind of chasing her down. And you know, I've liked her in a lot of movies. You know, one of her most famous movies is The Lady from Shanghai, and I don't like that as much. What I liked about her so much in You'll Never Get Rich is that she was allowed to be likable and fun. You know, Lady from Shanghai, sure, she's kind of doing this femme fatale thing, right, which I understand, but, like, that's not the mode I like to see her in. So it was really, really fun to see her kind of come into movies. She had done some stuff, I think, smaller parts or, you know, chorus girl stuff, right, or whatever, but this was like her first leading role. And to just come into it so fully formed is fascinating,
like,
to me.
Like, not raw.
Yeah, like, right.
Like, polished.
Not like, oh, I can see what Rita Hayworth will be eventually. It's like, here she is, world, like, Rita Hayworth, one of the greatest movie stars ever.
How old is she in that movie?
I don't know.
Okay. So is it like 19 young or like 23? Because that's a pretty big difference.
I don't know.
Ben. Okay.
I don't know.
I'm sure somebody
out there, try to look it up while we're talking.
I'm sure somebody out there is screaming the answer at the at the computer as we go.
So I will talk about the last movie that I saw in minor detail, but I'm curious if you saw this or even knew that it was released. And that is a movie from, I think, earlier this year called The Age of Shadows.
No, I haven't heard about
this. Guess
movie
what?
At all.
It's the new Kim Ji-woon movie.
What?
Exactly. Like, what is happening in the world?
No one tells me anything.
It, like, barely got any release. I think it showed up on VOD for literally a weekend before it came out on Blu-ray that Tuesday. It, like, showed up on VOD on Friday, and all of a sudden on Tuesday it's on Blu-ray.
The Age of Shadows, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's
got
all of our favorites in it. It is kind of a historical epic, sort of about... I mean, I don't want to give too much away. It's a bit dirty cops and...
Sure.
This political resistance.
Is it okay to ask, is it like modern or is it set back a little bit?
It's set back.
Further back.
Earlier 1900s, sure, I would say.
Okay.
I wish I had the exact date in front of me, but I'm a monster. So I thought it was fascinating that, like, it was not talked about.
Right.
And here we have one of, I think, the best filmmakers working today,
yeah,
with a new movie that is not being talked about. And it's not one of his best, you know,
sure,
like, but even not one of his best is, like, still
a good time.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And, like, there's times where I wonder what drew him to the material, because it doesn't always seem like the perfect fit, except for when it turns into kind of more of a crime movie. I mean, there are some shots and some more action oriented beats that obviously, like, come alive in a crazy way.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a spoiler. A character gets shot in the foot and his toe is, like, half off. And so, this being Kim Ji-woon, he's like, well, what if this character pulled his toe the rest of the way off in close-up? And I was dying.
That's the best.
Oh, my God.
It's because you're
so
a monster.
So I think it's absolutely worth seeing. I just couldn't believe that.
Yeah. I'm going to go home right now after this and then go watch it.
And I still haven't watched Okja?
Yeah,
Okja. Yeah, Okja. Did you watch it?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
It's in the queue.
So we have a new Kim Ji-woon and a new Bong Joon-ho, and, like, how are we not all screaming about this?
Yeah, this is the world that we're living in. It's great.
Anyway, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm still looking up Rita Hayworth.
The Age of Shadows.
Age in And You'll Never Get Rich. The Age of Shadows. I think part of the problem, too, is that it's, like, such a generic...
title.
Name? Like, right. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily seek out a movie called The Age of Shadows.
Was it an American movie? What did he make it for, like, an American production company? Or is it a Korean release released here?
I think it's a Korean release released here. Warner Brothers is a distributor on the Blu-ray. Yeah, I don't know. It's a bummer.
Everybody go check it out, guys.
Yeah,
go check it out.
Right, not like the highest of recommendations, but
it's worth seeing.
Totally worth seeing.
Everyone
obviously.
Should know.
Let's talk about Drive.
Let's do it.
What are your thoughts on Drive?
Obviously,
there will be spoilers for Drive, everyone. Yeah. So deal with it.
Yeah, I think that it's funny that Drive is a movie that is like the first thing that you think about is. That it's like a car movie, which is part of the kind of the reason why we made the association between Baby Driver and Drive.
Yeah, right. Well, Getaway Driver.
Yeah.
Sort of, modern, you know, crime
right.
movie. And,
right.
Yeah.
It's a guy who doesn't talk a lot, you know, whatever, stuff like that. But it's actually, there's actually relatively little driving in the movie compared to, and I think that was one of, I guess when, at the time, I don't remember this, but I guess some people were, they felt duped that they were, that the trailer sort of presented.
Oh, there was a
like
woman who
action.
Tried to sue it.
Oh, sure.
Tried to sue the movie because it wasn't this action movie that she was promised by the marketing.
Okay. Well, the marketing. Yeah, that's not how suing works, or marketing.
Also,
at
not
all.
How movies work.
Yeah, like, it's like,
it wasn't what I thought it was going to
yeah.
be.
Yeah, well, it's okay.
I'm sorry. Too bad.
Right. Like, a trailer's not a contract. Right. No one signed anything. Right. It's fine. Whatever. Anyway. You can get your $10 back if you're really upset about it, I guess. No, but then it's not, you know, it's one would think it's like this all action, all getaway sort of, but it's not. It's a little bit, it's more than what that is. I think this movie also was the first time, this was, I don't know about you, but this was my introduction to Nicholas Winding Refn. It was also my introduction to Carey Mulligan and to Ryan Gosling. I just hadn't. I know, which sounds really stupid because...
What, you just heard of Clute, so you,
yeah,
have,
I know.
You have an excuse.
Guys, I live in a very narrow universe where... Yeah, it's really weird. Where I only watch Transformers movies. Decepticons and Monument
By the
Valley.
Way, thank you. Thank you for seeing
that. It was fine. There's
had, no way it was fine.
I had a free day. It was okay. It gave me something to write about.
Let me ask you this.
Keeps me out of trouble.
You didn't totally touch on it in your review.
Sure.
And we'll get back to Drive in just 1 second. Everyone read Mark's review of Transformers The Last Night at fthismovie.net. And you didn't totally touch on this.
Sure.
And we didn't really talk about it.
Okay.
Is the movie full of Michael Bay quote-unquote humor?
I wouldn't say full.
Okay.
But there's definitely... I feel like in his earlier stuff, there's just like one or two moments where like it's obviously he's trying to be funny in the scene. And that would be it. And then the rest of it would just be like visual noise. Now I think there's more moments of where they're trying to be funny.
Yeah.
And it doesn't... It's not quite as... ham-fisted as the previous attempts, but they're also still not great. It's super just tone-deaf humor. I can't
figure out if it's because he thinks he's making movies for everyone and therefore it needs to offer a little bit of everything, including comedy, or because
right.
he thinks he's hilarious, which I think is also part of the problem. I think he thinks he's really funny.
Sure.
And he's not, and his movies aren't.
He's not funny, no. He's really not funny.
But each of the trailers, and this has happened to me probably for at least the last two Transformers movies, and it happened to me again on this one. Not that I want to see like a really serious Transformers movie, because I could give a shit. But
right.
the marketing, again, to the Drive lady's point, looks like a pretty grim, serious movie. And I would see the trailer for The Last Night, and it's not a good trailer because... I couldn't figure out one thing about the story from the trailer.
No, I couldn't
tell you at all what the movie is about.
You can't.
I know Anthony Hopkins is narrating things,
yep.
and there are robots, and Mark Wahlberg being like, we're not giving up on Prime.
Right, and there's a and it, unintentional.
I just found a Transformer.
I know, it's a Transformer. It's an unintentional like reference to an NXS song, which kept like two worlds colliding. Like I was like, what's it an NXS line? But it's clearly not. It's clearly not. But it is.
But it does not hint at the humor at all. And I think that's happened for the last two movies. They look kind of more like serious and badass. And then I would go see them, and they're just full of actors mugging and horrible racist jokes and Michael Bay thinking he's hilarious. And so that was part of it this time, was just like, I'm not getting fooled by this nonsense one more time.
You shouldn't. It's not funny, but I would say it's more, I don't know, maybe this says something about me. It's more palatable than the previous, like it's not like overtly homophobic and overtly misogynist and overtly
check out
hateful.
The curve we're grading on.
Yeah, it's just sort of, it's like misogynist and hateful in a way that we normally accept every day.
It's like,
should I be happy about it?
When
I don't know.
Trump tweets out something that's just stupid. It's right. Not racist or misogynist. It's just dumb.
It just makes, like, it only makes him look bad.
Way to go, guy.
Hey, it's just like everyday kind of stupidity. yeah, one of my favorite things about Transformers is that it tries to be every movie, and it's every movie every 5 minutes.
Yes, that I got from your review.
I kind of loved it, that it's so schizophrenic and crazy. I do like also that it's a little bit less, I know, I'm trying to be really positive. I know that's Adam Thaz's column. but it also seemed to be less visual, like, clutter.
Okay.
That I could actually sort of make out
right.
what
okay.
was happening.
Okay.
So that I was sort of happy about. But, yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
He has said now this is the last Transformers movie he's going to do. Now, he said that two Transformers movies ago
sure.
also.
Sure.
But I kind of wonder, based on the domestic performance of the movie, how many more Transformers movies we're going to get. Obviously, it's making a bunch of money globally, so it's not like it's done.
Yeah.
But it does seem like audiences have caught on or don't care anymore.
Yeah,
about,
I think it's a fatigue,
yeah.
I think.
They've gone to that garbage well one too many times.
Yeah. Well, not the Chinese and the Russians, though. They love
no,
that
listen,
stuff.
That's
they
fine. But that's,
up.
There's been five Transformers movies in 10 years. Every other year, we get a Transformers movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Where does the time go?
It's very upsetting. Yeah. I've seen four of them.
I've only seen, this is only my third one.
Okay.
I think I kind of checked out for the third one and didn't really, I wasn't really, surprisingly, I wasn't really engaged. It just wasn't really interesting.
No, that's
that
so weird.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
So back to Drive.
Oh, right, the movie that we
the
actually,
the movie that we're
a movie that we actually sort of like.
Yes, no, I like this movie
no,
a lot.
I like this movie. But yeah, it was my introduction to Ryan Gosling and Carey Mulligan and Nicholas Winding Refn. And so, I don't know, it's just kind of weird to think that, and I'm sure maybe other people were in that same position of like, I've never seen Ryan Gosling. Like, I've heard of Ryan Gosling, but
right.
I just never, I didn't want to watch The Notebook. I didn't see Half Nelson. I caught up with Lars and the Real Girl, like, later, which is a movie he did before. Yeah. I know. It's really cute. You shut your mouth. It's so cute.
All right.
With a capital C. And an eyelash batting.
The ultimate title for that movie, Enable Town.
Yeah.
Or just Enableton.
Look, it's
I
just
guess.
It's Canadians. they're so nice. They're so polite. And so it was like I didn't know what to make of it because I didn't have all this like Ryan Gosling like sort of background noise to sort of deal with. my initial impression of it was that he's I'm like, is this a good performance? And I didn't know. I didn't know because I was like, I guess I don't have anything to compare off of. Like,
okay,
I don't know.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Right, right.
Like, clearly the role is like he's deliberately not talking a lot. He's deliberately sort of not this expressive person. But I was like, I also thought his voice was weird. Like, is that?
It's not the voice you expect to come out
no,
of him.
No,
it's higher and more nasally. It reminds me of like the first few times I heard Sean Penn talk, and I was like, well, that was a surprise. Yeah.
It sounds like it, and it, but it sounds like it's got like some sort of regional accent, but I can't place it anywhere. I'm like,
yeah,
is it like
he does
a,
seem to be doing a weird.
Is that like a Philly? Is he from Philly? Is he from? Is
I
it
heard
like East Coast?
Some of like yeah, like New York or Jersey. I heard some of that.
Yeah, it was weird. But I really liked it the first time because it was sort of a straightforward. I love the synth score, which is great. The music is great.
Cliff Martinez.
Yeah. I love
kicking much ass.
Yeah, I love that it gets the vibe of LA right. Which I couldn't, I don't know. I couldn't, like, if you sat me down for like 10 minutes and forced me to explain what that vibe is, I would have a hard time doing it. It's my Rita Hayworth. but it's sort of like he,
she was 22, by the way.
Oh, nice. Okay. Okay. So I am fully formed at 22. That is not all of us.
I remember the first time I saw, I think it was To Have and Have Not. Lauren Bacall is like 19, and I was watching and I was like, that's a woman. Like, what is a 19-year-old today?
Right. You're a
Lauren
high school,
Bacall at 19,
college freshman,
is a 45-year-old today. It's unreal.
What have you seen in your life that you're so
right? That's times were so different.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Everything was better back then, guys. This vibe of LA of being sort of like noirish, but in this sort of like new kind of, I don't know, like the lighting, like Michael Mann does it really great too. He gets the streets of LA right. Mm-hmm. He's got that nighttime, like cruising in the streets thing. Refn totally got that right. So I really like it. I think it's totally, I know I'm all over the place here, but I think it's super rewatchable. I think part of why it's rewatchable is the music, but it's also, just, I don't know. It's, I think Gosling is what makes it rewatchable. Actually, it's now I sort of understand what he's trying to do with that performance a little bit. And so it's much more, I'm like, oh, okay. I see what he's doing. He's trying to do this sort of, it's sort of like all these movies. It's when you have this sort of silent, like the cowboy who comes into the town
right.
and rescues everybody, or like the samurai, or like the hitman with a moral code sort of thing. So, that's my crazy assessment of this. I really love it. I really like it a lot. I know some people for the critics for that year, they put Drive as their, a lot of them actually put it in their top 10, a significant amount put it as their favorite movie of the year, or as their top movie of the year. I don't know if I could go that far necessarily. I also don't remember what came out in 2011.
I had it in my top 10, I know.
Yeah, I think I might have had it in my top 10 too, but I don't remember.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Is it, do you think the movie works as more than sort of a style exercise?
I think it does. I did a little reading on, I wanted to see what Refn said about his own movie. What's funny about him is that he does a lot. It seems like he does a lot of interviews, and he always, I don't know if this is like douchey on his part or if he's like really earnestly saying this, you know, but he says so many things about his movies, and you're like, I don't know if all 27 of those things that you said about your movie like add up. Like, it's,
right,
I don't know if that
sure.
makes sense. And yeah. he just loves talking about his own movies. And so like, you're just kind of, I don't know. And that's good or bad. But he mentioned that, you know, to him, it was like a fairy tale. It was, you know, other people call it a neo-noir. I kind of saw it as a Western. I sort of saw it as like one of those like Ronin kind of like mm-hmm. lone samurai mm-hmm. kind of movies. So to answer your question, I think it does. I think it works as more than just a style exercise, because I think you see these elements of story that kind of work. We've seen it work in other places, and it definitely is here. So I think it gives it more. I think it, if it was just a style exercise, I would have been tired of it after like the first 20 or 30 minutes.
Right.
I'd be like, I don't know if I want to keep watching this. And I've had that experience with others of Refn's movies, where it just feels like a style exercise. But no, to answer your question, I think there's enough substance there that I think it works, that there's a lot.
Refn as a director is interesting. I still haven't seen the Pusher trilogy.
I haven't either.
But I think I've seen most of his other stuff. And I feel like when Drive came out, the comparison that I will make, and this is a very specific and obscure comparison to those of you who maybe grew up in the late 80s or early 90s.
Sure.
In maybe 1990, there was a band called Extreme. Gary Cherone and Nuno Bettencourt. Okay. They came out with a song, most of you have heard it, a little ballad called More Than Words.
Right.
This beautiful acoustic duet where they harmonize. It's a very pretty song.
Right. So many babies have been made to this song.
So everyone hears it and they love it.
Right.
Back in these days when you couldn't just download the MP3 or pirate the MP3 of the one song you like, you then had to go out and buy the cassette, most likely.
Right.
Because this predates CDs a little bit, or maybe CDs were just becoming big. Anyway. So you went out and bought the album, and then you put the album on and you're like, oh, wait a second. none of the other songs
are like this song.
There are no ballads. There are no other pretty songs. They're just kind of a, you know, a hard rock slash pseudo hair metal band.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people were then, you know, getting rid of their extreme CDs and tapes. Reffin is kind of like that, where people saw Drive and they're like, I like this winning Reffin guy. I really like this movie, Drive. Let me check out. Right. Valhalla Rising. Ooh, he's got a new movie out called Only God Forgives.
I'm
let me check
in.
That. Ryan Gosling's in it again. Let me check this out.
Such a sucker.
Right. And it, none of his movies are like that. Only God Forgives, I think. And I haven't seen, there's a documentary on, I think it's on Netflix, called My Life, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn or something like that.
Sure.
His wife made it during the production of Only God Forgives. My understanding, I've not seen the documentary, my understanding is that a lot of Only God Forgives exists almost as a pushback against the commercial appeal of Drive.
Interesting.
He and Gosling were like, uh-oh.
Right.
People are going to turn us into this thing.
Right.
Let's be something else instead. And so let's make this movie that pleases no one.
No,
and it, by the way, it's completely fine if you love Only God Forgives. I get it. It's beautiful. Great score. It's weird. It's not a movie that satisfies me, really, in terms of what I want from a movie.
Yeah.
But again, it seems designed to not do that.
I've kind of liked it more as time has passed.
I haven't really revisited it, so...
The more I think about it, the more I kind of appreciate it. Okay. I don't know if I can quite say that I like it.
Okay.
But I kind of, after a lot of thinking and a lot of reading, I'm like, oh, okay, I sort of like this a little bit more.
And Neon Demon is a movie I like a lot.
I liked it a lot.
Very stylish as well. And it was interesting to see so many people kind of reject it as being thin or superficial when so many of them were willing to accept Drive at face value.
Sure.
Which isn't to say that Drive is thin or superficial, but I don't think the movies are that vastly dissimilar.
Sure.
When Drive came out, it was definitely a movie that pushed a lot of buttons for me. And they were buttons that I didn't even necessarily know that I had, because it predates so much of this 80s callback culture that we're living in now, where so many filmmakers are like, let's do a synthesizer score. Let's do these credits. Let's, you know... particularly in genre movies where it's like, we want to remind you of stuff you used to like and not be a thing.
Right.
So Drive kind of predates a lot of that. And so all of a sudden you're seeing this movie with the fluorescent pink titles and the Cliff Martinez score. And it feels like an old Michael Mann movie. And you're like, oh, I love everything about this.
Yeah.
It's all signifiers that are pushing buttons for me. And so I saw it a couple times. I don't think I had seen it since the theater when I watched it last night.
Yeah.
I've owned the Blu-ray for years, not revisited it.
Yeah.
So it was a different experience revisiting it now, removed from some of the novelty of how retro it is, which is an oxymoron, really.
Right.
Like, boy, how old this seems feels new. I was surprised at how slow the film is.
Yeah. I don't think it. I'm. I don't know. I'm kind of the opposite. I remember it being slow in my memory, but then actually watching it, I was like, "Oh, it's not as slow as I remember."
Okay.
Because
and I wasn't
like,
bored.
Yeah.
But it's a slower movie to me. And honestly, what stood out to me beyond those things that I liked about it the first time, this time, were some of the supporting cast. I mean, obviously, the movie has a really good supporting cast.
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac before he's Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
Bryan Cranston, Ron Perlman, Albert Brooks, killing it.
Yeah.
Literally.
Having so much
Carey
fun.
Mulligan.
Yeah.
It was the, I always liked the Albert Brooks performance, but honestly it was Albert Brooks and Ron Perlman this time, and Bryan Cranston to some extent, that were really, to me, revealing that there's more to the movie. I mean, I still think it's a pretty straightforward story. As you said, it's kind of archetypal Western or, but I like, and I had forgotten that it was based on a novel.
Yeah.
And that I think is telling because I think the movie is great at hinting at backstory that each of these characters, again, not to call back the Rita Hayworth discussion, but they come into this movie fully formed, having lived a life, having a life outside of where we find them in the movie.
Yeah.
And Ron Perlman, you know, doesn't give my favorite performance in the movie, but I love the fact that he is so much flashier and showier and more of an obnoxious a-hole who has this whole thing where he hates the fact that he's, you know, picked on essentially for right. being Jewish in this world of criminals. And that's why he's kind of making this move. I love there's a little detail where Albert Brooks, after, again, we're talking spoilers, Albert Brooks kills Bryan Cranston in a scene that's like chilling, but also weirdly not sympathetic, but it's like he did this in the most humane way that he could.
And he doesn't really want to do it, but right. kind of has
to. He's not getting any enjoyment out of it. Yeah. Right. And the thing that moved me so much about it was after the fact, we see him with the razor blade that he used to cut his arm. He puts it back in this case.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of very special knives. And there's something, because we just saw him just pick up a knife in the pizza place and stab the shit out of Cook.
Right.
But the fact that he chose this very special razor blade to kill Bryan Cranston says that it meant something to him.
Right.
That this was important enough that he was worthy of, I'm going to take out the special razor for you.
And there's five knives in the case. Right. So you're like, oh, is right. it five people that he's, you know, whatever.
Right. And so it was little details like that give these people a life outside of the story that we're watching that made me like the movie a lot. Still, I won't say I necessarily liked it more than the first time, because I think some of it that first time was the novelty of like, oh, wow, this is a thing. But I found myself with a new appreciation of the movie.
Yeah. I liked one thing that I found was I just kind of stumbled upon this, not looking for it. Because I think I was just watching like a few clips of Drive, like on YouTube, just here and there or whatever. And then I ran across this thing. And there's like a million of these, but there's a YouTube channel called Every Frame a Painting, which is a really good, which I like a lot. And so they did a little video on the way that Refn sort of splits the screen. And it's like, with that in mind, as I was watching it, I'm like, yeah, he does that a lot, where he sort of like splits the screen into left or to right or to top to bottom, that sort of thing. So, and that goes to that style thing that we keep on talking about with this movie. The one thing I noticed, I mean, all the things that you're saying, I totally agree with. Another thing I saw this sort of second time around revisiting was the relationship between the driver and the kid, and Carey Mulligan's kid, that character. Cause it's, and I just had sort of blown over it before, cause I was like, well, the kid is just the kid, like, who cares? That's how I feel about kids in general, everybody. I'm just kidding. I'm not a monster. So the driver is always so stoic with everyone else, right? Every other adult, you know. But then the reason why he gets pulled into Carey Mulligan's character, why he starts sort of, you know, liking her or whatever, is the kid. And like they have this thing where they're sharing... the driver and the kid are always having like sharing this look of just like they like each other and like, oh, hey, you know, and that's how he gets pulled in. It's not because he finds her as a romantic interest, because I don't think he functions that way, but it's because of the kid. And the kid,
oh, I think, like, he absolutely finds her,
oh yeah,
a romantic interest.
But the kid is what kind of pulls him in. And like it's great to watch them like exchange these looks, the kids and the kid and the driver, always like, oh, how you doing, you okay? So that was something I noticed on the second. Again, it's just a little bit of business, because like the kid is like at such a lower eye line.
Sure.
Right. All the adults are up here, and then the kid's like down here, and the kid's like just staring at the driver. And like, that's just one more.
Well, and he seems to be one of the few people who look down to the kid, you know, like that he kind of notices him. The kid to me is half the equation, and Carey Mulligan is the other. But really, I think it's not. I think it's the sum of those parts. I don't even think it's necessarily the kid on his own or Carey Mulligan on her own. I think it's this idea of family and normalcy that is appealing to him.
Yeah.
I remember when the movie came out, I read this thing that Nicholas Winding Refn, like you said, he talks about his movies so much, and you're like, I don't know if I get that.
Yeah, I think how much of this is true.
Right. I think even Ryan Gosling was talking about this, that one of their motivating factors in terms of who the driver is it goes to that song, and obviously we all know the song, we all love it. You talked about it at the opening of the show, real human being and a real hero, you know. It's a little on the nose in terms of who this driver is and trying to function amongst other humans, you know, when he's kind of cut off, and this brings him closer to humanity, and then by the end of the movie obviously he's no longer there. But that he was a guy who grew up obsessed with like 80s movies and John Hughes movies.
Yeah.
And he fancies himself a character in one of those movies and doesn't realize that he's like a psychopath. And so he thinks he's saving her and thinks he's the hero, but he's not. Like, some of that I get. I totally get the idea that he wants to be the hero for Carey Mulligan and her son.
Sure.
That he's trying to do the right thing, that he is kind of a psycho, and the movie shows that a handful of times, you know, really when it counts, in effective ways. But this stuff about him growing up obsessed with 80s movies and John Hughes movies, again, maybe this is just something that, a backstory that they came up with because it helped them make the movie. But in terms of what's on screen, none of that is there, because I don't think this character has any relationship to
movies
or music. I mean, he's not necessarily listening to that song. That's just on the soundtrack.
Sure.
It's not Baby Driver. It's not, he has, you know, he works in movies as a job, but seems completely disconnected from it, as he does from everything else.
Sure.
So the idea that he's fancying himself the romantic lead of an 80s teen movie just to me is nonsense. And again, if this is just something that they talked about as a backstory, fine, but that does not come through to me at all, because I don't think he seems to have any kind of relationship to media, pop culture, art at all.
I think I read the same quote, and Refn was talking about he borrowed the Hughes, like the Hughes stuff was like the interaction between the driver and Carey Mulligan's character, the meets, how they meet and they start liking each other or whatever. The part where the driver sees himself as like the star of the action star of his own movie was a quote from Gosling, apparently, when he read the first draft of the script, which apparently was very, very different, and they rewrote it. Was that Gosling imagined this guy being, and maybe this was lost in like the redraft or something,
right?
That he imagined himself being this action hero from the action movies that he saw, which I thought, well, that's maybe a little bit more, doable or something. Because he does have those, and I'm not trying to like prove this theory right or anything, but he does have a little bit some of those affections, right? He pretty much wears the same clothes throughout. He's got like the sunglasses, he's got the toothpick, he's got the scorpion jacket, right? That I would agree with you that in the movie there's no apparent, you know, relationship to anything outside of himself necessarily, but he does seem to be conscious of like he has like an iconography. He has like a, like, it's always a toothpick with me, and then I always have this jacket, and that's like his thing. So.
But I feel like the reason that stands out less to me, you're absolutely right, the reason it stands out a little bit less to me is because each of the characters is kind of reduced to an iconography.
Sure.
I mean, Carey Mulligan is what?
Right.
Mom / girlfriend.
Right.
Kid is kid. We haven't even said his name. We just keep calling him the kid. Albert Brooks is gangster. And, you know, I said earlier that there are these little bits of information that fill in some of the gaps in who they are as people. But just the fact that the driver doesn't even have a name, he's just driver, you know. And a lot of that seems borrowed from the Walter Hill movie. I'm fascinated by the fact that Edgar Wright has talked a lot about the driver, has talked a lot about Walter Hill, and obviously it's an influence on Baby Driver. Which you'll even see even more when you see the movie. But, like, to me, Drive is much more the kind of stripped down existentialist take on the driver than Baby Driver is. I see a lot more similarities in there. So to me, Gosling is, the iconography is hero.
Yeah.
Just as every other character in the movie is. Do you know what I mean? That it's not necessarily a thing of his own making or affectations of his own choice. It's just part of this universe that Refn puts him in.
Sure.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I'm just trying to parse this out in my head.
No, there's one more scene that I think goes to this point a little bit. There's the part where it's the driver sitting with the kid and they're watching television, and we don't necessarily see what they're watching, but it doesn't matter. It's like some sort of cartoon or whatever. And the kid says, "Oh, that's the bad guy." The driver says, "Oh, how do you know?"
Right.
"It's because he's a shark." "Oh, there's no good sharks, you know?" And it's like, well, and the kid that kind of doesn't really answer. But I think that, again, just that's four or five lines of dialogue. But it goes to that thing of, well, how do you know that it's...
Right.
It speaks to the duality of the driver.
Right.
That I don't know if he's necessarily aware of, I guess. Maybe he is. He probably is. But just like, just because he's this thing, how do you know that he can't be good? Like, maybe he sees himself as, like, you know, he knows that he's not a good person, but like, why can't I be a good person if I wanted to or something?
Well, and I would almost maybe argue that it's the inverse, that he does see himself as a good person and doesn't realize that, like,
that he's bad,
that he's kind of bad. Sure. Yeah, that, like, he thinks he's a hero by helping out Oscar Isaac so that he can get away from this guy so they won't hurt his family. But what he's helping Oscar Isaac do is commit a crime. In that scene in the elevator, which we have to talk about the elevator scene. I mean, I think that's where it really becomes crystal clear.
Right.
That he doesn't necessarily understand that he's maybe not 100% the hero.
Right.
But let's talk about that scene, because I have a question that I want to ask you.
Go for it.
So it's an amazing scene. And again, communicates a lot of information without dialogue, which I give Refn a ton of credit for.
He's really good at it.
Yes. Yeah. And he does it a lot in his movies. I mean, I think all of his movies are much more... they're told much more visually than they are through dialogue, obviously. Yeah. And you may like that and you may hate it. But I think he does it effectively here. And the elevator scene is really the only scene in the movie that becomes a little bit abstract, where it crosses over into fantasy,
sure,
albeit briefly, because the lighting literally changes in the elevator.
Yeah.
After he sees that the guy they're standing with has a gun, he decides to kiss Carey Mulligan, and the lighting changes, and they have their romantic moment. And so there's a scene where I think, to what Refn and Gosling were supposedly saying, like, that's the only scene in the movie where we really see the world as he perceives it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That fancying this as a romantic moment. And so we see that played out through the lighting. And then seconds later, stomps the guy's head into a pulp.
Right.
And Carey Mulligan, Mulligan gets off the elevator and the doors close. And part of me wishes that that was the last time that we saw her. I think going back to her at the end diminishes the weight of that moment.
It's the phone call, right? They got a phone call at the end.
Even the phone call would be okay, but at the very last scene is her going to his door and he's not
there.
Oh,
that's right. That's right.
Whatever, it's fine. But I think had we last seen her as those doors close, the realization that, like, oh, right, we can never be together because I'm a monster and you're a normal person and we don't live in the same universe.
Right.
But let me ask you. So it's a great scene. But let me ask you this. When he turns to kiss her after he sees the gun, is that a goodbye kiss? Does he know, okay, what I'm about to do is going to send her away? Because I can't read his look after he does that and she gets off the elevator. Is it surprise, hey, where are you going? Or is it, I'm sorry, this is who I am? Huh. What is the look? And is he saying goodbye when he kisses her?
I've got nothing to support.
I am expecting the correct answer from you, the definitive on the record answer. This is the one interpretation of Drive.
Like Refn, I'm going to just make my answer visual and not vocal at all. I'm just going to dance around in Patrick's basement. It's going to be weird. I'm taking my shirt off right now.
He's taking out seven neon pink lights right now. So
doesn't matter.
This is kind of cool.
Yeah, and he's putting fake blood on himself. And there's a hammer and a bullet. I don't understand. I think when he kisses her because... I don't know.
Is it the I'm the hero moment? Is it... Because last night as I was watching it, yeah. I was thinking, oh, this is goodbye.
Sure.
But only because I know what's coming next.
Sure.
You know what I mean? The first time I saw it, I didn't think that.
I don't think so either. My inclination is just that it was... for a guy who's not very emotional outwardly, that this is a moment where he, like, those emotions actually welled up in him. That he, I don't think it was necessarily goodbye, but I think it was the possibility of him not seeing her again. Like, that she might die, I might die, this guy might kill both of us. So it's sort of goodbye in that way. But I also think it was just that moment of, I'm going to do this directly heroic thing for you. Because I don't think that's happened. I don't know. Has that happened in the movie before up until that point?
Like he
fixed her car.
Right. Otherwise, it was trying to help.
They went on a ride.
Oscar Isaac,
you know?
Getting him killed.
Right. And so it's the first, like, directly heroic thing that he gets to do for her. Heroic, you know, air quotes. So I think it's, like, multiple things to answer your question. I think it's kind of like, this might be goodbye, whether we like it or not. Because I don't think... I don't think he's totally sure whether they're going to get out of that or not.
Okay.
You know. So, but it's also like I want to do, like, I'm doing this for you, kind of thing, to have his moment or whatever. And then the look afterwards when he's done crushing that guy's skull like a goddamn pumpkin.
It's pretty harsh.
I like it when they go back and then you see his foot go through.
Yeah.
Because
it's one of those things.
So
I love
uncomfortable.
It. Not to bring up There's Something About Mary, but there's something that filmmakers do where they trick you into thinking they're not going to show the thing. And Something About Mary does it beautifully. Where
right.
He zips his dick up in the zipper.
Right.
It goes on and on and on. They're talking around it. Everyone's reacting. Just when you're sure
they're
not going to show us,
nope.
Boom,
bang.
It's the only thing in the frame. and this movie does the same thing, where it's like, it's all happening off camera, and you're like, okay, I get what he's doing. He's stomping his head. That's, whoa, shit, he just showed us.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think the look when he is done with that, and then she's out of the elevator, and he's looking at her all covered in blood or whatever, I think that's when he snaps out of his, because I think you were saying before, like when the lighting changes and the timing of the scene changes too,
right.
That's like his fantasy world or the way that he sees himself.
Right.
And I think also the way when he's beating up the guy, even though it speeds back up to like normal time, that's also how he sees himself as well. But then when he turns around, I think that's the moment of, oh yeah. So you haven't seen this before.
right.
You
okay.
have not seen this side of me. Because up
right.
until that point, he's
right.
been nothing but like nice and
right.
kind
right.
and like nice with her kid. And, you know, and the look on her face is just like, I can't.
Is it surprise?
yeah.
Is it like, wait, I thought I was the hero. Like,
yeah.
where are you going?
Right. You know, and
I think we just found a Transformer.
Right. It's Transformer. She must be.
I just stopped on this fucking dude's head. Mark Wahlberg is the driver.
Oh my gosh. Mark Wahlberg is just playing Michael Bay.
I'm a real human being.
He's just playing Michael Bay in all these movies now. Look at their hairstyles now. They look exactly the same. It's terrifying. I'm a real human being. Baby, I'm from Philly. All right. It's also, and so I think it's just he realizes, oh, she's never seen this before about me. It's also the same look kind of on his face when... the part where they're trapped in the hotel room with Christina Hendricks
uh-huh.
and those two dudes with the shotguns come in trying
uh-huh.
to get him, and then he fights his way out of that and he turns to look out of the bathroom door, and it's kind of the same look on his face of just like, you know, he's all like amped up
mm-hmm.
and on adrenaline, but it's also that like that's the side of him, you know, his like beautiful Ryan Gosling face covered in another man's blood.
You haven't watched this movie until you've watched it next to my wife. to say that she has a thing for Ryan Gosling is quite the understatement. And it was really Drive that did it. I think she became aware of him in The Notebook because he's just very sensitive and loving, and he's a real dreamboat. But then we went to see Drive, and like her world changed. And
was it a darker world?
No, it's just a world in which I cannot compete. And so,
it's a sexier world.
I've accepted it. It's not something that bums me out. But my goodness, just hearing her reactions as we watched Drive last night, I was like, do I need to be here for this? She loves his sad eyes and the way he looks at Carey Mulligan, and everything he does was just giving her like a real lady boner.
Wow.
Like a real Mrs. Stiffy. Like a real
She-rection.
I guess some other
Mississippi is my favorite one. I've never heard of.
You can use it to count to one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi.
Just as a side note, for Erica's birthday, we got her just for full disclosure for Erica's Ryan Gosling obsession. For her birthday, we got her a pillowcase. Mm-hmm. That is a picture of the hey girl meme Ryan Gosling with the glasses and a tank top, and he's very bearded and beautiful. And we got that pillowcase for Erica, and she almost started humping it in the office. Mm-hmm. It was weird.
She's taking pictures of herself with it around the house.
Right, yeah, it was uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I wish that was a joke that actually happened.
Nope, that's
a good
real thing. This is all a true story.
Mrs. Stiffy. that's going to be the name of my fantasy football team this fall. It's going to be great.
There's a beautiful moment. You know, the scorpion jacket is a little bit on the nose, and that's fine. But there's a beautiful moment at the end of that elevator scene where the camera it's behind him and it pans down to just the scorpion on the jacket.
Right.
And it's a great, again, it's a very literal metaphor, but I think it works just in terms of the whole story about, hey, you knew I was a scorpion, like, after that scene, that's when that makes sense to pan down to the jacket and be like, oh, right, you're a scorpion.
Right.
And I feel like it's undermined a little bit later when he makes a phone call and talks about the scorpion and the frog.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember about that.
He makes the subtext text in one of his calls, I think, to Ron Perlman before he shows up at the pizza place. Oh. And I was like, oh, that kind of undermines the beauty of that one shot if you're going to now call direct attention to it.
I don't remember that.
Why does he put the mask on when he is approaching the pizza place?
I think, well, they know what he looks like, but I think he wants to case the place to see who's there before he, I think he wants to make sure that Ron Perlman's character is there before he like does whatever it is that he's going to do. Cause I think they all know him by face, right?
Right.
Cause Albert Brooks knows him.
Right.
And
Ron Perlman has seen him, talked to him.
So I don't think it's just for them, for the surveillance, just to kind of scout it out, and he doesn't want to be seen. Although that mask is creepy as hell.
It is, and I just couldn't decide, is that Refn just enjoying the weirdness of that visual?
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because I don't know if there's really a logical reason in terms of the story why he would do that. It's just like, well, that would look weird.
Yeah. And it's also so strange that no one notices that he's staring in through the window with his fake nose pressed up against the door.
As he, you know, approaches Ron Perlman on the beach.
Right. But at that point, Ron Perlman knows who that is.
Yeah, oh, yeah, like, for sure. He's wearing the jacket. Like, yeah. The one jacket he wears always.
Are you the other guy? Right. Is that Mark Wahlberg underneath that?
I knew this really handsome guy who wore a scorpion jacket, but you're clearly a bald. You're Vin Diesel in a scorpion jacket.
With a mustache.
I'm a real human being.
Groot.
Family.
Want to play a game? Who's the better killer? I'm going to kill you with this cup. I think also, I don't know. I mean, Refn might be playing around with the thing of that's like his actual persona, right? That this is who he really is. You're not this handsome Hollywood guy.
But then I almost feel like he needs to do more of that.
Sure.
So this is just one of these things that I come to. And again, I like this movie. I'm not trash talking the movie, but there are certain things that I wonder, okay, was this just done for the sake of a visual. And if that's the case, doesn't it lend more credence to the notion that this is largely an exercise in style?
Sure.
And I don't even believe that.
Yeah.
But there are certain things that come up where I think, oh, when you wear the mask, it's just to create this cool visual. And if that's the case, is that our primary concern?
Sure.
Even though I don't necessarily think it is. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think instead of thinking of it just as like the thinness of the movie just because it's so stylish, I think, I don't know, instead of like thin, I think the word I think of is like sparse.
Yeah.
That it's deliberately very sparse, which I think fits better with the fact that we think it's a movie that's, you know, that has a story and is right. trying to sort of say something instead of just an exercise in style. I think I was also thinking about the title,
mm-hmm.
and I think in reading some of Refn's comments and some of Gosling's comments, I thought about the title being not just about, obviously, you know, driving a car, but also drive meaning like all these the other meanings that the word drive has, right? Like this
in terms of like what motivates.
Yeah,
you?
like he's just a because the driver is always he's always driving. Like he doesn't. I think I read this in Ebert's review that the character doesn't delineate between like all his different jobs because it's all related to the same thing, right?
Right.
I drive for criminals,
right?
And I fix cars, and I drive for Hollywood movies. Who cares? It gets all the same to him. It's all the same thing, you know?
Right.
And so he is this kind of like force, right? He's always moving. He's always pushing things forward or pushing things back or fixing things or moving. And so I think of drive in that sort of way. And then all of a sudden in this story, his drive becomes different he tries to make it different, right?
Right.
That he's motivated by this other thing. He has to push his, whatever his force is, he has to push it in a different way. And so it was fun to think about the title meaning something different.
I appreciate that we don't get a ton of backstory on him, that there isn't a lot of like,
right.
Discovered the kid when he was just five.
Right.
His parents were missing, and
there was a car accident.
Took him in, right.
Yeah.
Right. I love the opening sequence for a lot of reasons, one of which being I like that Refn clearly sat down and said, well, how can I do a different car chase? There have been so many car chases, and it's hard to outdo the
sure.
best ones.
Right.
So how can I do one that's different? And the way I'm going to do it is just by making it smart instead of fast,
yep.
by making it slow, a lot of braking, a lot of hiding, you know. And I love too, and it didn't really click with me until probably the second viewing, but the whole idea of this basketball game being on in the background the whole time, from the moment he takes the phone call in the opening scene to the whole time he's in the car, we have this back and forth between the police scanner and this basketball game. And you wonder, like, why is he just a huge basketball fan? Is
right.
this something we're going to find out about his character? And then the payoff of what that is so smart and well-timed. And so I love that opening chase, quote-unquote chase. When there is a legitimate car chase, then later in the movie, after the Oscar Isaac thing goes bad and it's him and Christina Hendricks, it's fine. Like, it's not a bad car chase, but I don't think shooting action is Refn's strong suit.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say he does a bad job with it. It's a fine car chase, and there's a couple really cool stunts, you know, where the car turns around, basically,
right. yeah.
While doing 70 miles an hour. But, like, I don't think it's as well. And part of it is because I was watching it either the day of or the day after seeing Baby Driver. And that's obviously one of the things that Edgar Wright really excels at is kind of filming action and momentum. And that's not Refn's strong suit. So the car chase, the one real car chase in the movie isn't a great car chase. You know, it's fine. Yeah. But like for a movie that's so much about driving, it's interesting that it's not one of its strong suits.
Not a ton of driving.
No.
Honestly.
No. Which, again, is fine. And I appreciate that he keeps finding different ways to film things, whether it's that opening car chase or I think about the confrontation with Albert Brooks at the end, the way that he shoots the shadows in the parking lot instead of them, I just think is really cool.
Yeah.
And I applaud the patience for how long it holds on that shot of Gosling before he drives away.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a testament to Gosling's performance. His performance has been calibrated in such a way that the whole thing is practically leading up to that last shot, because yeah. he sits there for 30 seconds, unmoving, not blinking.
Right.
And of course you're just like, oh, is he dead? Is that how this movie ends?
Or did like my computer freeze up?
Right.
Or
but
is the reel broken?
That character is, right. And so then when he like blinks and drives away, you're just like, oh, right. Okay. That's okay. who that guy has been the entire movie. But yeah. I for sure thought the first time I saw it that the movie was ending with him dead in the front seat of his car.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, would be okay, but I like this ending better.
Oh, yeah. This ending, I think, fits that, you know, lone gunman.
Right.
You know, master
lone
of the
gunman
samurai
we usually associate with, like, a crazy person.
Sure.
Like an assassin or, you know, somebody bad. So, yeah, I like the samurai comparison better. Yeah,
that he has, like, a code that
right.
only he kind of adheres to and no one else knows.
Right.
And then he sort of drives off into the distance. I like Refn. And so I think Drive also helped me appreciate Neon Demon when it came out. Because Neon Demon is also a movie that's far more divisive, as it turned out, than Drive was. Drive was sort of universally sort of liked. But I think he got all that L.A. stuff right, you know, just the feel of it, just this superficial, like the city itself is like its own character. Like he does a good job of making L.A. a character. But I think it also adds into, like he's such a good, he's really, and why I will always be sort of excited about when he comes out with the movies, that he's such a good visual storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of. This extremely cinematic, like he's really good with. I'm not saying that visual, the people who are really strong on the visual stuff are like better filmmakers, but like if you think, like cinema is like a visual medium, and
right.
he's really good at telling stories visually. And so it's always exciting to see his stuff because he's always looking for something weird, and you don't always. He's also not afraid of just like hiding what the thing means. Like you're looking at it and you're like, I don't know what that means.
Right.
Why? I don't know. What? Okay. Well, I'll just keep going. And he's like, it's fine. Just keep going. It's fine. Just keep watching this. Okay. So I think I already know the answer to this, though. But do you think the Gosling performance is a good performance?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it does the job that it needs to do. I think it does what's asked of him. I think it works in the universe that is established here. I mean, I think there are other performances in the movie that are better, and perhaps because they have more to work with, because there are shades there that they can play that Gosling does not have. But I think it's good. Do you?
I appreciate it more on repeated viewing. At first, I kind of, again, I think now I know, because I've seen other Ryan Gosling movies up to this point, you know, like the legendary Gangster Squad. Los Angeles is mine! What is that voice? I don't understand. What are you doing, Sean Penn? That was so great. That was a good time. But now with knowing what I know about Ryan Gosling and what his kind of range and what he can do, I think I feel better about it. Another question. Drive was sort of universally kind of really well appreciated and acclaimed. But now sitting here 6 years later, it's popped up on a lot of like overrated lists. I don't know. So what do you think about that?
I think overrated lists are garbage by design. I think they exist for, again, people to tell you that your opinion is wrong.
Sure.
Which I guess you could also say about underrated lists, but I don't know. Underrated lists to me seem to be trying to boost up the reputation or the visibility of something.
Like, here's the thing that you might not have seen before.
Exactly. Right. It's not like all the critics were wrong about this one. This one's awesome. Sometimes I guess it can be. The right underrated lists to me are more about like, hey, what about these things? You should see them. They're good. Whereas overrated is just like, that thing you like, you're wrong and you're stupid,
it's
and
garbage.
It's bullshit.
It's a right. transformer.
So,
right.
Exactly. So it doesn't surprise me that has happened. I also think some of it has to do with maybe for some, the spell wearing off, where, again, it felt new and exciting. I think some people maybe with some distance are starting to feel like it is kind of thin, or they've seen Refn's subsequent movies and gotten nothing out of them,
yeah.
and then decided that, oh, then Drive must be bad too.
Sure.
And I was tricked,
right.
because Only God Forgives I didn't like, and Neon Demon I didn't like. So he must actually be a bad director who tricked me with Drive, and therefore
sure.
it's overrated.
Sure. Or I was on drugs at the time.
So it does not surprise me to see that happening, but I don't agree.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't agree with it either.
I like what you said about Neon Demon, and I haven't put any thought into this, but it would be an interesting conversation to have, because I wonder to what extent Neon Demon, I don't think Neon Demon is like a great statement on femininity, obviously, because Refn is not the guy to make that statement,
sure.
but I wonder how much, because I think you could make a case that Drive is very much about masculinity.
Sure.
And what these different characters believe it means to be a man. And does that work as kind of a gender counterpoint to what Neon Demon is saying about being female?
Oh,
I don't know.
I love this premise. I think when I think of...
We've had no time to think about it.
Yeah.
And we're wrapping up,
yeah,
so we're not
yeah,
even
yeah.
going to be able to talk about
well,
it. But, you know,
yeah.
discuss amongst yourselves.
yeah.
We'll see you in a week.
Couple minutes. No, I think it's worth talking about for a few minutes. One, I would agree with you that Refn, I don't think, is the guy to make that statement.
No.
I think it's a little bit... it's interesting how that conversation or that idea manifests itself then in both movies, right? This idea of masculinity, and then these men in particular all can't do it, like they can't do it legally, you know? They all choose mm-hmm. like not... They can't do the right thing, even if they sort of try to, right? Standard, like, goes to jail and he tries to do the right thing, but it gets pulled back in again. The driver is, you know, a little bit of a psychopath. And Bryan Cranston's character is, you know, has a body shop, but then gets into trouble with these other guys. And, like, they're all tinged with, like, crime. Like, they're, like,
sure,
illegal
yeah.
activities.
Yeah.
And so... if there is a statement about masculinity there, then it's about, like, you can't, you have to get your hands dirty. You have to do, you know, that's a line from the movie,
oh,
right?
Oh, man. What a great line.
Yeah.
Mine
oh,
too.
Gosh.
so great. Just even the car as an extension of masculine. I mean, we could obviously go on and on about
right.
all the different. Also, yeah. while we're talking about this idea of masculinity, and there's a scene about halfway through the movie where Gosling comes to see the character Cook, right? That's his name?
Yeah, the other bad guy.
Right.
This guy who's holding
in the
standard hostage, right?
Strip club.
Yeah.
And it was making me very angry as I watched it last night, because as somebody who watches a lot of action movies, I just am sick to fucking death of scenes in strip clubs. Like, so is this Refn... is that scene some sort of, not commentary on those scenes, because I don't think he's actually saying anything about those scenes,
right?
But is it part of the signifier of the movie that he's making? Is it like, well, if we're making this kind of a movie, we've got to have the scene at the strip club with
right.
the naked women, or is it just shameless, like, hey, let's throw some naked women in here?
I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Right. I mean, I feel like it's the second, but I think in trying to give Refn too much credit, I'm like, oh, come on, he's smarter than that. He's better than that. Why would he just throw... Yeah, but boy, it really just does seem
it
to be
kind of
a scene
sense.
At a strip club with some naked people.
Yeah. I think what makes that scene, what I kind of like about it, is that I felt really uncomfortable... because, like, clearly the driver is unfazed by, you know, being surrounded by naked women. And it's not like a titillating scene, you know, you're not there and it's not like, ooh, look at all the whatever. I think that's just what kind of, so I don't know. What I like is that he's trying to attack and beat the guy up, and like he's about to hammer like a bullet inside of a guy's skull, and then all these women who are like not clothed with their like boobs hanging out are just like, oh my god, he's about to kill And I think what's also disturbing about it is not their reaction, which is like they were sort of shocked or whatever. It's like they actually, they don't, like they're not screaming and freaking out
right.
as if like they've seen this,
this
before.
Is a regular
this is not the first time right, that someone's right. gotten shaken down in the stripper dressing room or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, as much so as I kinda, would like I to say like it. It's about the driver's focus and his the fact that he doesn't have eyes for anyone else. Like, I can't think of another version of that scene if it was Van Damme or Stallone or Scott Adkins or whoever. Sure. There's no version of that scene where the hero walks in and is suddenly distracted by boobs and is like, "Whoa,
ooh,
I forgot what I was here for."
Oh, jeez.
Maybe Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds might be the lead.
Mark Wahlberg.
You know, a lot of naked broads in here. You know,
I'm
gonna hammer this bullet in your teeth. I forgot what I was here for.
I'll talk to you later. but
my
yeah,
Reynolds needs some work.
It's okay. But it is a kind of a scene that would be in a movie like that. Getting back to the male and female thing.
Yeah.
So one, it's interesting that all these males have to like do some sort of crime that's part of their manifestation, right? There's this sort of inherent violence, this inherent like evil or something that's part of it, whereas for Neon Demon, again, having no time to have thought about this, that it's about appearance, it's about maintaining an appearance, maintaining like some sort of youthfulness, which cannot be which is so hard to define and is so hard to be self-defined, right? It's got to be judged by someone else, right? So when all the spoilers for Neon Demon, I guess. There's a part where like all the girls like audition, and then the whole process seems one totally ridiculous and just completely arbitrary. Like all of these girls are first, it's like totally humiliating because like they're just all in their underwear or whatever. But it's like this is like common practice apparently. But then they're all judged, but they're all like beautiful. So how's like this one person more? Right. I don't know. I don't understand. But again, it just seems arbitrary and doesn't make any sense. And there's this, it's all about surface and illusion and appearance.
Well, because both movies are sort of about the standards by which we measure success for the respective gender. And so for Neon Demon, it's very much about physical beauty and this kind of unattainable perfection that you need to have. And for Drive, I don't think that those are, you know, sort of culturally the standards by which we measure success for men. It's not necessarily about being the best looking. That's not necessarily the thing we place the most importance on. Oftentimes it is things like status and financial reward. And those are the things that these characters are pursuing, right? Or even a family, you know, which is sort of Gosling's motivating factor. I don't know. Maybe they are kind of two sides of the same coin. Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting. Well, especially in the noir universe that he's created, you know, maybe not in the real world. He's not necessarily making a commentary about that, but in this noir world that he's sort of created, that's what ends up happening. That's what masculinity looks like. That's what femininity looks like. I kind of want him to make another L.A. movie just to see where else he goes next.
Yeah.
Right, I don't know.
Instead, he's going back to Bangkok.
Woo!
I don't know if he is, by the way. I'm just making that up. I don't know anything about what he's making next. But.
Was it
Bangkok, right?
Thailand, yeah.
Oh, boy.
That movie was bananas. I came out so confused and concerned, and I drank a lot afterwards. I was like, I've had three beers, and I still can't figure out what's happening.
Anything else about Drive you want to mention?
No, I think that's it.
All right.
I think it was satisfying.
Well, thanks for talking about it with
me. No, man, it was awesome. It was great.
It was fun.
It was a good pick. I think it's a good pick, like, post-June exploitation. It kind of goes along with...
It helps ease us back
what gets us back into normal life.
Into normal life.
I don't know. What do we do now? It's July, guys.
I don't know. Yeah, last year at this time we had a fundraiser to plan, and I don't know what to do with my July now.
I don't know what movie. I just want to keep watching like joint exploitation movies and like
you should.
I
got
to catch up.
The Age of Shadows.
Yes.
Anyway, so thank you guys for listening. As always, you can find us on Twitter. We're at F This Movie. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on YouTube. You can find us in the iTunes store or on Stitcher. Subscribe if you haven't. Rate and review us if you haven't. We always appreciate it. Helps the show out. You can find all of our podcasts, nearly 400 of them. We're closing in on 400. I think we're just a few shows away.
Nice.
And daily content at fthismovie.net. And you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. Mark, I will let you take us out.
Patrick, I can't eat. I can't sleep. All I do is think about you.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.